number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loans studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, it was a pretty entertaining weekend of college basketball and NBA basketball. If you had a chance to catch the Golden State Warriors take on the San Antonio Spurs, the Spurs continue to be red hot at home. They're now 35-0 as they beat Golden State, held them to 79 points. The thing about that game, though, was all year long, the attention has been on Golden State, and rightfully so. They're the ones pursuing the 73-win record. They're the ones that have the most dynamic players in the NBA. They're the ones that are the defending champs. They're the ones that are set, that are leading the league in scoring. They're the ones that are fun to watch and are sort of catching everybody's attention. So I'm not here to say that we've all been fooled. No, Golden State is still who they are, despite losing to San Antonio, who they are. But this game sort of reminded me, or at least kicked me in the gut, that the Spurs are putting together a very, very good season. And it's gone, a lot of it has gone unnoticed because, again, of the dominance of Golden State. Look, if Golden State was having an okay year, a really good year, but just a an okay year, a year that's not pushing towards the record, but still doing all of this kind of play where they're dynamic and they're fun, and Steph Curry is still Steph Curry, and they're on the covers of magazines, and all the kids are now trying to emulate them, and Curry continues to become sort of the NBA icon that he's becoming. The Spurs would be either A, in first place already in the Western Conference, or at least those two teams would be tied for first place. The Golden State Warriors are still on a record pace to break the 72-win mark, but the Spurs are only three games behind them in the Western Conference. Any other year, the Warriors would have had the Western Conference already wrapped up by now, for crying out loud. But they don't, because the Spurs have had a great season that has gone largely unnoticed. And Saturday night was really put into the forefront of, hey, when this team plays good defensively, this is the kind of stuff they can do. They're not going to win every game against Golden State because Curry's not going to be that bad. He's not going to shoot that poorly from three for the whole night. And that team is not going to be held down to 79 points just because the Spurs want them to. This was a good night for San Antonio. It was a bad night for Golden State. When they meet again, it'll probably be a good night for Golden State and a not-so-good night for San Antonio. That seems to be the way this goes. But again, it's just yet another reminder that maybe, just maybe, the Spurs are onto something, and this thing is not such a wash or not such a cakewalk to the finals like we think. And it was fun, because watching the game, you sort of go, oh, wait a minute, hold on. This now could be, instead of watching a team sort of pursue history and wanting to know if they make it, we may actually have a legit adversary here. And that's what I liked about watching Saturday. Look, do I still think the Golden State Warriors are going to win the NBA Finals? Yes. Do I still think the Golden State Warriors are going to better the Spurs in a Western Conference Finals should they meet there? Yes. Do I hope the basketball gods give us these two teams as a Western Conference Finals? You better believe it. I really hope I don't see either one of these teams fall apart in the playoffs. I want to see this in the finals, because I saw it Saturday. I was with a bunch of guys in Memphis for my daughter's soccer tournament. And we were all kind of hanging around downstairs, and the game was on in the lobby. And we were having a fun time talking and laughing and whatnot. And the game was on. And it was really kind of neat. And A, I was, because of people, they knew what I do, I was explaining a lot of this season to a lot of guys who were kind of following the NBA just on the periphery. And there are a lot of guys like that who look, hey, I follow one team, or I may not follow the NBA at all, but I kind of get into it. There is this, everything is about Golden State. Oh, and here come the San Antonio Spurs. And Adam, you and I were talking about this. That if I'm Golden State, I got to be careful, because if I look too tired, this could thwart me in the postseason.
Yeah, 100%. They just, I feel like they need to take a step back, maybe get Curry rest here and there, And same thing with Clay and Draymond. Just get them some rest. Even if it's a full game off, it's okay. I mean, you're still the better team, even without Curry, than most of these teams you're going to be playing down the stretch. So I just don't wear yourself out and then cost yourself the championship, even if you do get to 73 wins, because then it's not the same.
Yeah, don't get the 73 wins and then not win the title.
Right, 73 wins without the title means nothing.
You're not the Patriots.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you can't 16-0 without a title. Nobody cares that you're 16-0 during the regular season. You didn't get it done. So, but what was fun to watch was the Spurs. Like, Greg Popovich is almost like this. I don't know, like this, like cockroach you can't kill. And I use that affectionately. He just doesn't go away. Like, he's like, Golden State, they're really good. And then he just kind of devises this defensive chess mechanism that thwarts Golden State for now. And it's going to be interesting to see if I'm Golden State, all right, and if I play San Antonio again, do I react to what happened on Saturday night and try to counter that? Or do I just go, you know what? I'm going to save that for the playoffs. I'm going to save, however we break this down, I'm going to save it for the playoffs. Because that's the one guy in the postseason that I would be scared of if I show too much during the regular season. Different schemes and whatnot, different lineups or whatever. I don't want Popovich to have too many things on tape. He can figure out a lot of stuff, but I don't want Popovich with too many things. This is like Belichick. You know, like the more you show Belichick, the worse you're going to be. So that's kind of where I'm thinking that the next time these two teams meet, does Steve Kerr fully counter, you know, what he saw from the Spurs defensively, or does he go, all right, no, we just roll out what we have and see what happens? It's all good, because if I face this team again, the more I can surprise him with, the better. Because it really was a masterful job by the Spurs in that game defensively. I've never seen Curry and the whole team in general work so hard for buckets. I mean, they worked so hard all night for points. To only get 79, we've had games where they've had 80 points by like the first 4 minutes of the third quarter. I mean, they will get 80 points and a half if you let them. They got 79.
We still get two more games in the regular season.
Yeah.
Two in a 4-day span.
Yeah. So again, if you're Steve Kerr, how much do you try to counter? You know, you just go with what you've got. Go with what you've been doing. If you want to tweak something up, do it in the playoffs. Don't give Popovich too much to work on. That'd be fun. That is going to be fun. But I swear, if the Clippers disrupt this party or Golden State disrupts this party, I'll never forgive them. Upset the Spurs like, yeah, in the second round. Oh,
get out of here.
Can you imagine if Golden State loses like in the second round? We'd be like, oh, click. All right, LeBron, here's your chance. Go get that title. Click.
And then he loses to the Spurs
again. Oh, can you imagine that? The Spurs knock him off again? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was fun. I had a good weekend. It's at my daughter's soccer tournament. They lost all three of their games. I watched a lot of college basketball. I watched the Golden State Spurs game. I watched Jason Day win the golf. Had a good weekend. It's good. That's why I like the NCAA tournament. It's fun. I'm flipping through everything. Click, click, click.
We're 1 week closer to the Masters.
Oh, I know. And boy, you can really feel it, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
They've been pumping that thing up. That's the one thing about the Masters promos that I love. I love the pageantry. They show the Masters jacket being sewn, the patches being sewn on. And there's nothing like Ben Crenshaw signing a scorecard to make you go, oh, here we go. Augusta, baby, Augusta. Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson talking about what it's like to be in the champions locker room. Oh, it's great Masters promos. That's coming up. That's like Jim Nance has got like the best week of his life, right? He does the Final Four. And then he slips on over to Augusta National to begin the broadcast.
What a life.
Thursday. What a life. What a week. Get to bang that out in a week. Final Four, and then whoop, we're off to Augusta. I know it's coming up pretty soon. So yeah, like it was really a good weekend. It was really a good weekend, marked by the fact that my bracket was just completely ripped apart. Thanks, West Virginia, by the way. I don't mind Michigan State, but West Virginia, come on, man. That was my special little upset team. All right, we'll talk about Indiana and Kentucky, what that game meant actually to the Hoosiers and maybe to John Calipari. And your thoughts on the NCAA tournament, what you've seen so far. More surprises to come. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loans studios.
And back to Tony D.
All right. Saturday, Kentucky and Indiana played. And I thought this was the game of the tournament so far in terms of the great matchup and the great history of the two programs. People looked at this in the brackets when it first came out and said, look, if Kentucky and Indiana advance in their opening rounds, you're going to get a really, really good game. Because here was Indiana having a very good season, and Kentucky obviously SEC champs and all that. But these are two programs that used to play each other all the time. And then they stopped playing each other because of basically a dispute over location. Kentucky wants to play Indiana on a neutral court. They obviously, because they can get revenue and whatnot through ticket sales, and the two sides haven't really came to an agreement on how they're going to work out the future matchup. So they just discontinued the series, which is bad for college basketball, because in a regular season, it's not like college football. You can schedule these things. It really doesn't hurt you. It's not something you have to be afraid of. You know, it's not like one loss kills you. I like to see programs like this play each other. These are two really, really big time programs. And they're border states, and they've had a rivalry. So why not play? But business sides of college basketball prevails. So they're meeting in this game in the second round, and it lives up to everything. And it lives up to everything. Look, Kentucky played pretty well. I mean, Jamal Murray and Tyler Ulis scored like 43 points combined to the 67 Kentucky had. So Kentucky is a little bit of a guard-oriented team this year, got the guard play they wanted, but they couldn't score in the front court. And they couldn't stop Kentucky's front court. I mean, Indiana's front court. And this is a big win for the Hoosiers. Does it say anything about Kentucky? Kentucky Blue Bloods will all kind of hem and haw about this one. For a while, of course, you don't want to lose in the second round. You certainly don't want to lose to a rival that's got a little bragging rights on you now that you're not playing them. There's a little bit of a double-edged sword to this. But I liked Kentucky going into this tournament. I liked the way they played. They played well in the SEC. I thought they were going to play well in this. But if you're going to beat Kentucky, a team like Indiana, more than capable of doing that. This was not one of John Calipari's best teams in terms of talent. It was one of his best coaching jobs. But this was a game that lived up to everything that was said about it going in. The hype was, this is going to be a really good game. Indiana's very good, and these are some of the things they can do well. These are the things Kentucky can do well. And I think both teams showcased that. Both teams struggled with some issues. But overall, this was the game that lived up to the hype. I really, really enjoyed watching this. Even my brother who went to Kentucky was like, hey, these things happen. 800-777-2907. Although he did curse out Indiana and Tom Crean. But, these things happen. So we were talking earlier about how the NCAA tournament is looking so far and what we got out of the first 4 days. And I look at this tournament and I've always said, when I get to the Elite Eight, when I get to the Final Four, I don't mind a surprise. I don't mind a surprise team. I'm not looking for chalk. I'm not looking for a Final Four where if I add up the seeds, I get four or five or six. But I am one of the reluctant guys that wants to root for upsets all the way through the tournament. And the reason I'm reluctant to do that is because I don't like the unknown. And the unknown can be a super Cinderella being forced to repeat the act again and them not being able to do it. And what I mean by that is sometimes you get a team like Stephen F. Austin who beats West Virginia and should have beat Notre Dame today. Should have beat Notre Dame to get to the Sweet 16. And then sometimes you end up with Middle Tennessee State, who beats Michigan State leading wire to wire and looks like they belong and looks like they're not bothered by the moment. They didn't look bothered 1 second against the Spartans. They didn't look like they were unprepared. They didn't look like they were, you know, in awe of where they were and who they were playing. As a matter of fact, a lot of people on Twitter commented on how calm Middle Tennessee State was at the end of that game. They didn't overly celebrate. But today they went up against Syracuse, and Syracuse zone defense really shut them down. Middle Tennessee State shot 29%. Their leading scorer was had 11 points. Syracuse shot 55% and won by 25 points. They used a 21-2 run. Now, again, I'm all for the big story. I rooted for Middle Tennessee State all the way through. Sure, it ruined my bracket, but it may be the greatest upset I've seen in the NCAA tournament. Can I withhold? Can I withstand rooting for them all the way through? All right, but what am I hoping for? I'm hoping for a repeat of that every step of the way, and eventually I'm just not going to get it. Eventually I'm going to get a 25-point blowout or a blowout. I mean, sometimes Butler plays for the national championship, and sometimes George Mason goes to the Final Four. But when push comes to shove, when we get to the Elite Eight or the Final Four, I much prefer Kansas against Duke, or Oregon against Villanova, or North Carolina against Virginia, or Notre Dame taking on Iowa State. I don't know. I mean, those matter. Those games, I want those games and those matchups a little bit more, because I do worry about getting a Cinderella in that deep and then just going, oh my gosh, this is a waste. Yeah, and sometimes it'd be surprise me. Look, when George Mason went, I was bummed because they got to play Florida in the Final Four, and Florida destroyed them. Whereas UConn would have been a better game, would have been a better test. Now, some people will say, well, that's what the tournament is about. It's all about Cinderellas. Yeah, it's when we get in the first couple of days. Those are the spices to the stew. Those are the flavor. That's the flavor to what we're cooking. We got to have some of those. It wouldn't be the NCAA tournament if we didn't have some of those. I think it said a lot the first couple of games that we did see a number of upsets. That we did see an 11-seed advance, a 15-seed advance, a 14-seed advance, a 13-seed advance. I loved it. I'm fine with it. But what happened in the next two rounds, in the next round on Saturday and Sunday, we just saw those things close up a little bit. Sure, we got an 11-seed Gonzaga. Adam and I have been talking about it. This is a Gonzaga team now that is starting to play really, really well. Kind of the team we were looking for and liking. Syracuse is a 10. They play good defense, as we know. They're led by Jim Boeheim. They've got good, solid players. But look at the brackets now. 1, 2, 3, 4 in the West. 1, 2, 3, 5 in the South. 1, 5, 6, 7 in the East. 1-4 Midwest bracket with 11-10 Gonzaga Syracuse. We're not seeing the advancement, that second gear by our Cinderellas. Yes, Northern Iowa should be here. Yes, Stephen F. Austin should not have lost to Notre Dame. They had that game and made a few mistakes down the stretch. But in the end, if you're looking for the better teams in the college basketball brackets to advance, that's exactly what you got in the Sweet 16. 800-777-2907. One of those teams that you should be paying attention to, the Miami Hurricanes, who faced Villanova, will face Villanova in the Sweet 16. We'll break them down next. It's Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio, and looking at the madness, it is the NCAA tournament as we are now heading into the Sweet 16. The Miami Hurricanes are heading there. They'll take on number 2 seed Villanova. And the Hurricanes have been one of those teams that you should be paying attention to. Gary Furman covers them for Rivals.com, and he joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you, Gary?
Doing great. How you guys doing?
Good. All right, so let's start with Miami in the last couple of years. In terms of what Jim Larrañaga has been doing down in Miami, how soon did he put this program on the map for basketball?
Well, he did it very, very quickly, and they went to the Sweet 16 in 2012, 2013, but he lost all his players and had to start all over again, and that could sometimes be, the problem at a program like Miami that doesn't have that basketball tradition. You know, even though you have a good coach who knows how to put a winning team together, until he's able to string several years together, it's very difficult to sustain a certain level of play, but now he's back with a team that is kind of similar to the team that he had 3 years ago, and that it's an experienced team. It's got kids who are seniors who have been through the battles, so to speak, in their college career, and he gets them organized, and he's going to ride them as far as they'll take them. And I'm not sure that we've seen the best that this team has to offer yet. Just being honest, I think the onus is on them to take their game to a higher level, here this week, and I think there's upside.
What is their style of play? What has been the Miami brand of basketball?
Well, they try to take care of the basketball, and they attack the basket relentlessly. They've got a point guard and two wing players that are very, very good at that game and can beat guys off the dribble and attack. And then when they want to shake it up a little bit, they can hit three-pointers. Without a question, that's what the team is built on, is that style of play. But they also have a 7-foot center who I think that they're going to need to play like a 7-footer here this week if they're going to advance any further. They've got guys coming off the bench. One in particular is a second-year guard by the name of Jaquan Newton, who had very good games during the season, who's kind of struggled the last few weeks. He got himself suspended for 3 games, and at least to my eye, he hasn't been the same since. And they need him to get his confidence and mojo back a little bit, because it's going to take, obviously. You're talking about a Villanova team here on Thursday that many people at times during the season thought might be the best team in the country. So this is not an easy out by any stretch of the imagination, nor should it be. In the Sweet 16. So I just, like I said, I think Miami's got another gear that they haven't shown yet. And the challenge for them is going to be to bring it all together for this game on Thursday night and try to find some way to win so they can take a shot at Kansas.
Do they need that extra gear? And the way you've talked about it, do they need to show more to beat a team as good as they are defensively, like Villanova?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, I really think they do. They've played well enough to win the first 2 games. Got a great performance from Angel Rodriguez in the game the other day against Wichita State. They got them to the Sweet 16, and he got them out to a 21-point lead early. And they actually got a little tentative after that and lost the entire lead and actually trailed by a point in that game before gathering themselves in the last 5 minutes to win by 8. I think that they can play better. I think that, some of their support players have been a little tight here in the tournament and aren't making the type of contributions that they normally make. And I think now that they've been through the NCAA tournament for one weekend, now they have to go back home, regroup, and they're experienced now. They know what to expect. They know the pageantry with the bands and the pressure and all the things that go along with March Madness. And, they've experienced that now. And, now it's time for them to get back to playing basketball at the highest level that they can. And if Miami can get a couple more guys playing the way that they played in large stretches of the regular season here on Thursday night, then, I think they can beat Villanova and get to the Elite Eight.
Gary Furman joins us, Rivals.com. He covers the Miami Hurricanes. We'll take on Villanova in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. If you're talking tournaments, then you talk guards. In terms of Sheldon McClellan and Angel Rodriguez, what kind of guard play do the Hurricanes have?
Oh, man, they got everything you could want. I mean, in that regard, I mean, you know, if you were going to the point guard factory, you know, you'd want a few more inches on Angel, but what he lacks in height, he replaces with guts and seems to take his game to its best level when the stakes are the highest and when the opponent is the best. And if you look at him the last couple of years and some of the games that he's played, even at Carolina and at Duke, and, you know, he's a big-time guy when the lights are on. And I think, you know, he's someone that you're going to be able to count on Thursday. I don't think there's any question about that. Sheldon McClellan, you've got a kid that's just incredibly gifted athletically. He's got an NBA shot and NBA athleticism. You know, doesn't always show it to the degree that you think he should. I mean, you know, I watch him at times, and I think he should be universally considered, you know, one of the top guys in the country. I mean, he's got physically, he's got, you know, lottery pick type tools. I mean, he really, really does. But, you know, he hasn't been able to do it consistently at that level to earn that type of recognition. And Thursday night, he's got the stage that a kid like him can only dream about here in the NCAA tournament. You know, he's in the final stages of his college career. He's been going to the NBA draft. And he's got a chance here to step up and show what he's capable of. I mean, because he's a lanky kid. He's got great penetration skills. He comfortably shoots the three. Really has all the skills you could want in an off guard. So I'm not going to sit here and sound dumb and say Miami has the best backcourt in America. I think that, you know, obviously Kansas and some of these other teams, North Carolina, have very good players as well. But for a school like Miami that's not a traditional basketball powerhouse, I think they're going into this game with as good a backcourt as they could ever wish for. And, you know, typically guards control the game in the NCAA tournament, and that's why I think they have such a great chance. But they're going to need it from the other guys. They're going to need Tony Ejikeri to play better at center than he played against Wichita State. They got dominated on the boards, which really is what kept that game close. Otherwise, Miami would have won that game going away. They're going to need him to be a little bit tougher inside. They've got a veteran transfer from Oklahoma State, Kamari Murphy, who's a tough-minded kid who I think can give them a lot there. And then I mentioned earlier, Davon Reed, who's their other wingman. He's a junior now. Another kid that's got NBA three-point range that can, you know, get hot and get things done. So they're a team to watch, no doubt about it. You know, Villanova is a very, very tough opponent, but I don't think Miami will be outclassed going into this game, and see what happens.
Gary Furman, again, Rivals.com of the Miami Hurricanes, will take on Villanova coming up in the NCAA tournament. Gary, great talking to you. Great stuff. I appreciate it.
Anytime, guys.
All right, so again, watch out for Miami. Again, that three seed, we've been talking about them a little bit. They don't get the kind of run the other teams, you know, the other teams get. And a lot of it is because they don't have this long tradition of being in this tournament and, you know, having to deal with one-and-dones like a Kentucky, like a Kansas, like a Duke, or having the same kind of NCAA tournament success as those schools. But Miami's had a very, very good year. Again, led by two fantastic guards, Angel Rodriguez, Sheldon McClellan. They're really well coached by Jim Larrañaga. It's very interesting because they're starting to become, you know, this sort of basketball now, I wouldn't say basketball school because football tends to always kind of rule in Florida, but they are getting the kind of basketball respect. Now, they go up against a Villanova team that we've said from day one, and a lot of people have been saying from day one, look, what kind of Wildcat team are you going to get, right? The Wildcats come in, they play really well defensively, but Jay Wright has had team time and time again into the NCAA tournament who failed to live up to expectations. So if Miami does kick it into that next gear, they've got the guard play, they've got the strength, they've got the shooting, they've got size down low, they are well coached, and coming out of the ACC, they're tested. They could give Villanova a really good shot. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Well, I got to give a shout out to our affiliate out in Denver, Mile High Sports Radio, 1340 AM. My wife is out there on business, and the good thing about having a show like this is that she can listen if she stays up. She can hear my voice. Not like she doesn't hear it too many off, you know, all the time anyway. But she says she's flying out to Denver. She goes, oh, I'll listen to you on my way to the hotel. So she just texts me and said she was listening on her way to the hotel. So she is out in Denver for business these next couple of days. And Adam, listen to this. So she says to me, oh, she goes, I said, well, who are you going out to Denver with? She goes, oh, well, I'm going with our junior accountant, Max, and we're going to go see some things. I go, oh, okay, cool. She goes, I know. She goes, I've been spending so much time with Max. She goes, have you ever heard the term work husband? And I went, no. Not at all. She goes, oh, yeah. She goes, people at the office kind of kid because Max is kind of like my work husband because we spend so much time together. I go, I've never heard this saying ever. What does this mean? Of course, I had heard it, but I just wanted her to think like, you know, like put the little bit of like a little nervousness in her.
Right.
And she was like, oh, you've never heard that? I go, no, not at all. What does that mean? She goes, oh, nothing. They're just kid. You know, I go, oh, yeah, this is how it starts, right? You get a little work husband, then it's like work kisses, and then it's work hugs, and it's work snuggle, then it's, I was like, that's how it starts, doesn't it? So she's like, no. I go, yeah, this is what I expect. So all weekend she kept saying, no, it's not, I don't know what you're talking about. I can't believe you never heard that before. I made her nervous the whole weekend while we were at the soccer tournament. Because I like to do
that. Gotta keep her on, you always gotta keep your wife on the toes.
She goes, she says, he's like 24, 25 years old. I go, yeah, well, wait a minute. Hold on one second. Why? Just because we're old? I'm supposed to think that's not a threat? That's a good-looking 24-year-old kid you're traveling with? Come on. Stop. But no, so I want to thank the affiliate in Denver for carrying us so I can say hi. Hi. Now get some sleep. It's been a long day. I was at my daughter's soccer tournament this weekend, and I promise I'm not the parent that talks about my kid and their athletic prowess on this radio station, but I will tell you when I get a little crazy. My daughter played three games this weekend in Memphis. They lost all three games, and I think the combined score was like 33-2.
That's not very good.
I mean, just awful. Awful. And here's the thing. Because you got kids, and eventually you're going to put them in sports, I'm assuming, right? Yeah. Take it from me. Every single person that says, I'm not going to be that parent, baloney. You become that parent. No matter what. When it's your kid, you can't help it. When it's your kid, you just can't help it. My daughter is out there playing soccer. She's on a travel team. This is a tournament. They make these big deals out of these tournaments, going to go there to win. But our team is like, you know, we're going to work on development. We're going to make sure the kids are right. We're going to make sure the kids are playing their positions. We're going to make sure they learn the fundamentals. We're going to make sure they get better. And we don't care about wins and losses. I'm like, all right, fine. No problem. I don't care about wins and losses. Fine. So you sit there and you watch, right? And all the parents are the same. First goal goes in. We're like, oh, good try, girls. Good try. Second one. Oh, all right. Keep it up. Don't worry. Don't worry. Third one. Oh, golly. All right. Keep it going. Fourth one. Okay. What's going on here? Fifth one. Okay. Enough. Sixth one. Coach, come here. I got to talk to you. Seventh one. This time I'm pacing. Eighth one. I'm not even watching. The ninth one. I'm flipping out. My wife says, you're embarrassing me. Sit down and stop doing everything. By the 10th goal of this game, I had enough. I was losing my mind. I said, that's it. I'm calling people on Monday. I want answers to this. I want to know why this is happening. Why is my kid's team getting slaughtered? It is 10-0. I was a disaster. I mean, a disaster. And you know what's funny though? I say it all the time. I don't want to be that parent. I don't want to be that parent. I become that parent. It's impossible. You can't help it. And three games was like that. Three games. And of course, the girls afterwards are all laughing. And they're, you know, meanwhile, I'm steaming. And I go, oh, I'm sorry you lost. She goes, eh, what are you going to do? I go, oh, okay. Is that how we're going to do this? I'm like, you know, there's, you know, it's okay if you don't, you know, glad you don't feel the urgency of not winning. I'm glad because I don't want it to be about that. But I said, aren't you a little upset that you lost, 10 to nothing? Yeah, but no. Then all of a sudden I feel like a fool. But I was such a mess all weekend. Finally, at dinner time tonight, I said to my wife, I said, all right, how do you handle this? Because I want to know, because I'm watching them just lose by a million. And she's like, well, it's all about growth. It's all about getting better. I go, all right, explain to me how you know they're getting better when they're losing 10 to nothing. Like, I come from this crazy sports world where X's and O's mean wins and losses. So if I have a college team like South Carolina, how do I know South Carolina is getting better? How do I know South Carolina is improving? Because they win, or they come very close to winning, or they look good in an effort to win. When they don't, I don't know where the growth is. So I became the lunatic parent this weekend. But luckily, like I said before, I had all this college basketball games and the NBA game on Saturday night, because I wasn't the only dad who was a little upset about them losing by a million. So we were all talking about it, having a beer or two in the lobby of the hotel, and chatting, watching Golden State play San Antonio. So I found out I wasn't exactly the only one. I was probably the more vocal lunatic. Although my wife did tell me, stay away from the coach. I'm not allowed to talk to the coach. Apparently, I'm not allowed to talk to the coach ever again, according to my wife. So,
sometimes you just have to step up and say something.
I know, man. I can't. You know, and just seeing those other parents get to celebrate with their kids, like, way to go, Gene! Yeah, great kick! Yeah! And I just wanted to go, all right, that's enough. Shut up. I paid good money to sit in this tournament. It was a hard weekend, but a good sports weekend nonetheless. It was a great, great tournament and NBA game. Yahoo Sports Radio.